This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. This week, we're devoting the whole program to the issue of human rights, focusing on three different countries. I've been talking to UN human rights experts working in South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, and Somalia, where some of the most egregious forms of abuses are taking place. They also discuss what's being done to stop the violations. There's been a pattern of excessive use of force in the repression of dissenting voices across the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, a senior UN official in the country has warned. Jose Maria Aranaz, the director of the UN Joint Human Rights Office of MONUSCO, the UN mission in the DRC, made the remarks on Wednesday. A report by his office found that defense and security forces used excessive, disproportionate, and at times lethal force to prevent and contain protests in December 2016. The fact that lethal weapons are deployed for crowd control is one of the reasons why so many people were killed and injured, Mr. Aranaz told me.
This report puts together a final investigation that has been shared with authorities that records the excessive use of force by the security forces between the 15th of December and the 31st last year at the end of the presidential mandate in the DRC. We documented at least 40 people being killed by the security forces, including 5 women and 2 children, of which 28 were killed by the army, 6 by the police, and the remaining 6 in joint operations, 147 people killed by bullets by the security forces, also including 14 women and 12 children, and almost 1,000 people being arrested. It's not only the gravity of what happened at the end of December, but also the fact that there has been a pattern of excessive use of force in the repression of dissenting voices.
Mm-hmm. The national police is usually in charge of crowd control, but your report says that the Congolese armed forces, the Republican Guard, and military police were sent in instead, although they were not properly trained or equipped for that. What suggestions has your office made to remedy this?
Yeah, we think this is at the center of the problem. Deployment of military forces, including the Republican Guard, which is an elite military force, and this is at the center of the excessive use of force. Also the fact that lethal weapons are deployed for crowd control is one of the causes for the elevated number of people being killed or injured. We have not only the Human Rights Office, but the rest of the UN system is working on the proper training, deployment, and equipment of the security forces. And this is something that we do with the UN police and also with our good officers' efforts to avoid this kind of situations. But as I said, I'm looking at our report since January 2015. We have had a number of incidents of this type.
Human rights must not end up being a secondary consideration as the new Somali government focuses on securing and stabilizing the country. That's what Kirsten Young, the chief of human rights for the United Nations Assistance Mission in Somalia, UNSUM, told members of the Security Council in her brief on the situation in the country. Journalists, human rights defenders, and political leaders have been killed, arrested, and harassed, a report by her Office on Freedom of Expression in Somalia has found. However, it also noted the country's progress in making government more accountable and widening the political space for Somalis to air their views. Ms. Young told me how the so-called security exception is often invoked to suppress human rights.
The government has successfully conducted transition to a new president, and all indications are that human rights will be one of the priorities. Another key priority is security, and one of our concerns always is that human rights ends up being a secondary consideration when you're focusing on improving security in a country. So main message for me is making sure that human rights is up front when they're discussing how the national security architecture will evolve, be developed, and then how it will be supported. So that's one aspect. The other is focusing on the African Union-UN partnership. Last year, a resolution was passed which has previewed how peace operations may be functioning in the future. And one of those is that the UN-assessed budgets will be used to support African Union peace operations. So the Somalia model is going to be one that is probably going to be more frequent. So we're under scrutiny, but in a positive way, and in terms of how we're working on human rights and supporting the military operations.
Reports that have been coming out of Somalia have sort of been mixed between, you know, very positive news like the inauguration of the new president, vibrant media, and yet there's also this drought that is really threatening the lives of so many people. Mm-hmm. When you look at human rights, when you look at, you know, where Somalia was and where it is today, how would you rate it?
It's come an incredibly long way. Last year we issued our public report on freedom of expression, and one of the things we focused on was the gains that have been made, which have been absolutely massive. But you have to always remain vigilant. And I think the period that we're going through now is where the country will decide how it wants to treat human rights. Is it something that's going to be an optional luxury, or is it going to form part of the fabric of the society? So I think it's a very interesting time, and especially when security is a key consideration, because what I call the security exception is often invoked to suppress human rights.
People in South Sudan are living in fear because of ethnically based killings and other violations such as rape, arbitrary arrests, and kidnappings, the director of human rights at the UN mission in South Sudan has said. Eugene Nindorera, who's also the representative of the High Commissioner for Human Rights in the African country, was recently in New York to brief member states on the situation there. The violence has continued unabated since forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and those loyal to then Vice President Riek Machar started fighting again in July 2016. It has now spread from the capital Juba to the oil-producing Unity State to previously unaffected areas like the Greater Equatoria region. Mr. Nindorera sat down with me to discuss in detail the violations that are taking place in the country.
We are also facing a number of challenges right now in Wauchilouk near Malakal, but also in former Unity State, where there is really still the same kind of human rights violation, which is killing of civilians, sometimes along ethnic lines, which is, of course, very worrisome. Also, sexual and gender-based violence. Also, people who have been arrested, arbitrary and prolonged detention, abduction, people who are really in detention without any possibility to know even where they are so far. And they are facing a lot of challenges. They don't have access to their lawyer. They are not brought before the judge, the court. So there are really a lot of violations. And we have also a huge number of South Sudanese who, during the last few months, have left the country and they are now refugees in the neighboring countries. The most group is in Uganda.
For those who stayed behind and who are in the country, are they living in fear?
One can understand why they are living in fear, because there are really a lot of violations. And most of the time, people are killed or are injured for things that they have not done anything. So basically, is then, of course, they have to fear, because anything can happen to them. So that's why some of them just decided to go in exile in foreign countries. And there is also internally a number of IDPs, and you all know that in South Sudan there is a specific situation where we have protection of civilian sites that are really under the responsibility of the UN. And we have now under four protection of civilian sites almost 200,000 of people who are living there.
And these people cannot go home?
They are afraid. First of all, if they want to go home, it has to be on a voluntary basis. And we would like really to encourage them to go there. But even for some of them that I've talked to recently, they are saying that they cannot go there because they don't feel that they are safe. And if they are afraid of the military, they have the feeling that anything can happen to them if they are leaving the POC site. Where we went in Malakal last week, it's only the women most of the time who can go out, because the men have the feeling that they can be killed if they are going out.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.